I'm Dave Davies. Welcome to Leading Questions, a city election special part two, where we look at the candidates and conflicts in this spring's Philadelphia mayoral primary. In our last special, which you can hear at newsworks.org, we looked at the leadership qualities a mayor needs. Today, we dive into the issues, from education.
It's a civil right to get an education.
To jobs.
Growing our tax base, enhancing our population, have something to offer people to come here and stay here.
To police community relations.
There's no need for them to stand in a corner like that. At all.
We'll tackle those and more over the next hour, so stick around. On today's show, we're going to be looking at some of the key issues in the mayor's race and what candidates are saying about them. But first, we'll take stock of some of the major events in the contest since our last episode of Leading Questions. We've had some interesting endorsements, some testy exchanges, and a televised debate that took a surprising turn. Joining me now with some of the standout moments of the past few weeks is Newsworks 99 blogger Brian Hickey. Hey there, Brian.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, Brian, let's get to this first. It's perhaps the most memorable moment of the campaign so far.
All enabling legislation.
That's the sound of former District Attorney Lynn Abraham collapsing on stage during a recent debate. Brian, what does this mean for her campaign?
Well, it's not good for her campaign, Dave. If you were watching on TV, your initial thought, if it was anything like mine, was for Lynn's well-being. They cut away from the debate on TV, so you were left wondering. But then word filtered out that she was backstage and that she was okay and that she was just dehydrated and hadn't eaten much all day. So the next day, Lynn launched a mission to restore her quote-unquote tough cookie credibility.
I had a very small, and I mean very small lunch, and then was off to the races for the rest of the day. So I'm really quite fine, and I'm staying in the race. So if anybody's wondering, I wouldn't drop out no matter what, no matter what.
She lived up to the promise of those words the next day. We had a photographer with Lynn throughout Wednesday, starting with a breakfast forum and ending with a ward meeting at night. However, she'd been having trouble raising money, and that could be intensified by the image of her fainting during a debate. An unfortunate side note to the fainting incident, candidate Doug Oliver's spokesman sent out an insensitive tweet regarding it the next day. Oliver denounced those words and personally apologized to Lynn, as did his spokesman. We'll see if people remember that come primary day.
Okay, now Jim Kenney's had a nice run lately. There have been TV ads from his friends in the labor movement, and he's been getting endorsements from some unlikely and helpful places, right?
That's correct, Dave. Last week saw Kenney get endorsed by a group of African-American politicians from Northwest Philadelphia.
I stand before you humbled. I stand before you understanding the responsibility that I want to undertake. And I'm standing here understanding how hard I have to work to keep your trust and to keep your confidence in me.
Now, that was certainly a unique moment in Philadelphia political history. It was also one that caused a little friction between the Kenney and Williams camps, since it could broaden support for Kenney.
Now, Williams came right back with his own set of endorsements, right? Mostly African-American leaders.
He did, and while he denied that the endorsement event was a reaction to Kenney, his campaign did distribute maps showing the areas of the city that those endorsers actually came from and represent, and it showed a large swath of the city excluding Northwest Philadelphia. So take that for what it's worth. The Williams camp also took a hit last week when the city ethics board cited it for violations of campaign finance laws. The campaign agreed to pay $8,000 in fines and $27,000 in other costs. Williams did come back with another salvo of his own, though. He called for the FOP, which endorsed Kenney, to support the instant firing of officers who used derogatory slurs.
If certain words depart their lips that disparage an ethnic group, a gender, a person of a certain sexual orientation or faith, they should be fired. If they use those words as the F word when they were describing people of a different sexual orientation or the N word, they should be fired.
Kenney responded that discipline should be taken, but not as instantaneously as Williams suggested in his campaign event. It bears mentioning that in an interview I did with Williams last week, he said the endorsements and his ethics board issues wouldn't linger until election day, since very few voters are paying attention at this point in the race.
All right, we'll see about that. Now, both Kenney and Williams have gotten some big boosts from these independent groups that have been airing TV ads on their behalf, right?
The committee, backed by three wealthy pro-school choice executives, continues to buy $500,000 a week in TV ads to support Williams. Here's their latest ad.
Anthony Hardy Williams comes from West Philly, and he still calls it home. He knows that in this town, talk is cheap. It's action that gets things done. As state senator, he took action to make our...
Now, the two labor-supported PACs backing Kenny are at around $900,000 in buys. So far, all of the ads are positive. There's been no attacks yet, with yet being the key word in that last sentence.
Right. We'll see about that. Now, we haven't mentioned the other two candidates, Nelson Diaz and Milton Street. What have they been up to?
Well, Diaz has announced he's been endorsed by a group of national Puerto Rican leaders this week. And meanwhile, Milton remains Milton, drawing attention at forums. He did miss one gathering of candidates that was right in his campaign wheelhouse last week, though. It was about youth violence, and it was held at a North Philadelphia high school. He chalked up the absence to having the wrong start time for the event. So basically, he went to Dobbins High at 5 p.m. for an event that started around 3.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. We'll talk again in a few weeks.
You bet.
When we talk about past Philadelphia mayors, we tend to think of those more or less within our own memories. The city's first black mayor, Wilson Good, Frank Rizzo back in the 70s, and maybe the old blue-blooded reformer of the 50s, Richardson Dilworth. But as the name of our blog notes, we're about to elect our 99th mayor. What about the others? Well, here with a brief look at the early days of Philadelphia mayors is our show's producer, Shai Ben-Yaakov. Shai, what was it like to be a mayor of pre-revolutionary Philadelphia?
Well, let's just go back to that time. It was very different than it is today. First off, the city's early mayors are appointed, not elected. That change wouldn't come until the mid-19th century. The mayor is selected from among what are then called the aldermen of the city. They serve just one-year terms and have far fewer responsibilities than they do today. The mayor runs the meetings of the aldermen, but one of his chief responsibilities is to measure the bread.
What? Measure the bread?
Yes. Here's Temple history professor Jessica Chopin-Roney to tell us a little more about that.
It's basically his job to make sure that weights and measurements are accurate and that people are getting what they're paying for it and that the bread is not adulterated, things like that.
All right. That's a pretty hands-on job for a mayor.
Certainly. The mayor literally had his hands on the dough. And sorry about that. And in a broader sense, the mayor was in charge of local markets. Other than that, the mayor didn't do all that much in the 18th century. And in fact, this was an unpaid position. Most of these men, and of course, they could only be men at the time, were involved in local industry. No one really aspired to be the mayor. The city had no taxing authority at the time. That was all at the state level. And so it really had no money and no power. In fact, there are dozens of cases of an alderman being tapped to be mayor and paying a fine of $20 or $30 rather than serve as mayor. And this brings us to the case of the missing mayor.
The missing mayor?
Yes. In 1747, the aldermen appoint one of their own, a brewer named Anthony Morris, to serve as mayor. Then they go to try to find Morris. And I guess word had gotten out. And lo and behold, they can't find him. They search for him in Bucks County in Trenton. Can't locate him. They find his wife. She says he's out, won't say where. And she refuses to accept the official document that says he's the mayor, sort of like ducking a court summons. So early on, being mayor, not really something one aspires to.
Okay. What happened to Morris?
Well, since the aldermen can't find him, they hold a re-election and the previous mayor, William Atwood, serves another term, at which point it's safe for Morris to reemerge. It's not known where he was for that time.
Okay, the case of the missing mayor. Thanks, Shai.
Anytime, Dave.
And Shai will be back a little later in the show to share more stories of past Philadelphia mayors. Every candidate says job growth is critical to the city's future, and in this election, many are talking about the idea of making Philadelphia an energy hub. Susan Phillips is here to explain just what that is.
So what is an energy hub? Ask the candidates and you'll get a whole host of responses.
It would change the face of Philadelphia as we see it.
The energy hub is an interesting concept, and I think we should pursue it.
I think the energy hub is still in development.
That's not going to happen in our lifetime.
Here's what the Energy Hub aims to do in a nutshell. Take advantage of all that abundant Marcellus shale gas flowing out of wells in the northeast and southwest parts of the state. Places like Susquehanna County above Scranton or Washington County near Pittsburgh. Send all that gas to Philadelphia instead of spreading it out to places like New York or Canada or the Gulf Coast. And once all those billions of molecules of gas get to Philly, turn them into trillions of dollars. Use that cheap gas to power new factories. Turn that cheap gas into plastics or liquefy it and sell it abroad for lots of money. And yes, create good jobs. The Energy Hub's most powerful booster is Phil Rinaldi.
I think you can kind of see where we're going, right? Because we're trying to build the push from the Marcellus and the pull from Philadelphia. Then the final step will be to try to then create that linkage between that push and that pull.
Rinaldi runs Philadelphia Energy Solutions. That's the company bringing in all that crude oil that moves slowly along the city's railroad tracks in black tank cars. He also sits on a committee formed by the Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce called the Energy Action Team. Rinaldi and the chamber have been pushing for an energy hub and held a closed-door conference last December where they worked to recruit new businesses to the city using cheap shale gas as the draw. Rinaldi has also been showing up to the mayor's forums across the city. He's an advisor to former city councilman and mayoral hopeful Jim Kenney. Kenney has always been known as the guy pushing for environmental protection on city council, but he also has union support and backs the energy hub.
And that's what I think a mayor is responsible for doing in a city with a 27 to 28% poverty rate, to find people employment that changes their lives too. And I recognize the problems associated with it, and I understand the concern that folks in the environmental community have, but they would be sitting at the table with us if we were moving down this route.
That seat at the table would come as a welcome surprise to one of the city's most experienced environmental activists. Joe Minot has spent the last 30 years at the Clean Air Council, taking companies to court in order to get them to clean up their act. Minot says his efforts to participate in the Energy Hub discussions have so far been met with locked doors.
Yeah, it is frustrating. It's assuming that this group of people headed up by Rinaldi and the Chamber of Commerce sort of know what's best for Philadelphia, and we don't want to allow Philadelphians to sort of participate in the discussion until we've already made the decision and then we'll let you know what it is. And that's just obnoxious.
Minot worries the natural gas powered plants and processing centers would make the city's bad air quality even worse.
Are people talking to the candidates for mayor about what the impact of a fossil fuel energy hub will have on air quality in Philadelphia when we already don't meet the EPA health standards?
That issue is why Nelson Diaz says he's supportive but cautious about the energy hub.
It is important that we somehow control the emissions issue in this country and not continue to make them worse.
None of the candidates have come out against the energy hub. Milton Street is the one you heard earlier saying it just won't happen. Lynn Abraham supports it as a way to bring jobs to the city. Doug Oliver, who worked at Philadelphia Gas Works, says it's time to capitalize on the state's gas boom, but the hub could be more.
We can also be talking about energy efficiency, how we create jobs for people by making homes more affordable, by weatherizing them.
But perhaps the guy pushing the energy hub the most is State Senator Anthony Williams. His wife works for the industry trade group, the Marcellus Shale Coalition. Williams says he's got the political chops to bring the gas and the factories and even an export terminal to Philadelphia.
So I think I'm pretty good as a lobbyist, if you will. And certainly those relationships will not change. And by the way, they will be significant for the next mayor. That mayor has to work with city council, state government, and the federal government. And I've done all three of those levels.
But getting Marcellus shale gas to Philadelphia begins with that linkage you heard Phil Rinaldi speak about earlier. New pipelines cutting through rural and suburban counties. And those projects have run up against staunch opposition. I'm Susan Phillips.
We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, tales from Election Day in Philadelphia.
I think the most I ever carried was about $27,000 in cash. I had it around my waist.
Stay with us. Leading Questions continues in a moment.